Greetings once again from St. Michael's Broadcast, and we continue today with the urgent prophecies of the last times as they have come to us through the intercession of the Mother of God. In the 34th chapter of Ezekiel's prophecy, God sends a warning to his priests of the last days concerning their abuse of the flock and tells them that he is about to visit his people and that he himself will be their shepherd. This is a prophecy of the second coming. As he says, I quote, "Thus saith the Lord God, Woe to the shepherds of Israel that fed themselves! Should not the flocks be fed by the shepherds? But my flock you did not feed, the weak you have not strengthened, and that which was sick you have not healed, that which was broken you have not bound up, and that which was driven away you have not brought back again, neither have you sought that which was lost. But you ruled over them with rigor and with a high hand, and my sheep were scattered, because there was no shepherd, and they became a prey of all the beasts of the field and were scattered." The beasts of the field, by the way, are the heretics and enemies of the church who have entered the church in these last days and have made a league with the priests, so that the two are now working together as one in the common cause of subverting the flock with heresy. So going on, Ezekiel tells the priests, "Therefore, ye shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I myself come upon the shepherds. I will require my flock at their hand, and I will cause them to cease from feeding the flock any more. Neither shall the shepherds feed themselves any more. And I will deliver my flock from their mouth, and it shall be no more meat for them. For thus saith the Lord, Behold, I myself will seek my sheep, and will visit them. I will seek that which was lost, and that which was driven away I will bring back again, and I will bind up that which was broken, and I will strengthen that which was weak, and they shall no more be a spoil to the nations, neither shall the beasts of the earth devour them, but they shall dwell securely without any terror, neither shall they bear any more the reproach of the Gentiles." That's from Ezekiel chapter 34. So Ezekiel is saying that a time is coming when the people of God will no more be subject to persecution. The enemies of the church will cease. Now, for the past 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has been battered and persecuted by its enemies, and this persecution has reached paramount proportions in these last days, to the end that the priests, the shepherds, have now become the number one persecutors. That is to say, they have turned against their own religious heritage and have turned on their own sheep, especially those sheep who maintain tradition. So Ezekiel is telling the priests, lay off! Stop persecuting the innocent. Stop ridiculing those of simple faith who trust in the Sacred Heart. And in our time, Christ is essentially bringing this same message to his priests, but this time it is through a different prophet. We refer to the late visionary Veronica of the Cross, who was heaven's messenger in these latter days. And a little later in this broadcast, we're going to be speaking more about Veronica and how she was instrumental in transmitting this message to the world. But let it suffice to say that the message is urgent, for it forewarns of a plan of action that God the Father is about to take to restore the earth to its former purity. The Bible speaks of that time in the last days when mankind would be placed into the winepress of God's wrath. According to the message, that time is about to unfold. In the message of June 18, 1983, Jesus said, "All mankind will be tested before the great day of my return." Those who persevere through this coming time with courage and hope will be the pure wine of God. These are the true grapes that remain on the vine without spoiling. But those who conform to the world and who accept the modern-day reform in the Catholic Church will become the vinegar, forever spoiled and lost. The reason being, they're sour grapes. They envy their brother. They cheat and they lie. And they trample on their brethren just to get to the head, the worst of it being that this ravenous attitude has even entered upon the ranks of the clergy in these last times. Many clergy today will deny their faith and expose their people to all sorts of heresy and danger just to get a higher position in the church. They use their flock as a stepping stone to get ahead, while their sheep become a spoil for the wolves. In the message of June 18, 1993, the Blessed Virgin stated that today's Catholic bishops have become despoilers of the human race. At the time, this word seemed a little strong to some, but today most people would have no trouble understanding this, especially in light of the recent sex abuse scandal among the priests. And as long as today's American bishops continue with their present policy of pacifying homosexuals and sponsoring pro-gay activity in the church, they continue to merit for themselves that title of despoilers of the human race. Because they're too afraid to stand up against the feminazi groups who oppress the young and abort them at their concentration mills. To think that the bishops of God would give more credence to the bickerings of angry women than they would the Mother of God. They cry discrimination, but what about discrimination against the innocent and the unborn? They cry equal rights for women, but what about equal rights for unborn women? According to them, they don't even have a right to live. They're so full of hypocrisy and nonsense they can't even see straight, and for the clergy to be catering to their whims certainly constitutes a grave injustice. Instead of gathering their sheep and protecting them from nonsense, they bow down to these feminists and allow them to run their household. Isaiah prophesied of the present time when he said, "As for my people, their oppressors have stripped them, and women have ruled over them." Isaiah 3:12. The clergy today, many of them, still know the truth from their seminary training and from the good graces given to them in the past, but they're not coming out with it. They're not preaching Christ's word today. The general tendency today is to apologize for the truth and to pacify the people by giving them what they want to hear. One of the great evils being promoted by today's clergy is the fallacy that there is no hell and that we should think only of God's love. However, this is not based on love of God. It's based on love of sin, because they want to continue on in sin without having to worry about their eternal punishment. Our Lady reminds us that there is an eternal hell, and that it is only Satan who tries to convince us otherwise. Lucifer's great project in these last days has been to convince the world's peoples that there is no hell or Satan, so that our guard will be down. Jesus himself addresses this very point in the message of August 14, 1979, when he says, "Be aware that Lucifer, his greatest armor is to be not believed in. His greatest defense is that you do not know he is there, for then, like the invisible agent of hell he is, he can then wreak havoc among you." Unquote. You are listening to St. Michael's Broadcast, which is the radio program designated to bring to you the urgent message of Jesus and Mary to the world through the late seer Veronica of the Cross. We have a powerful story to share with you today. This is the story of a lost soul who spoke to her friend from the dead after she had been damned to hell. And in this vision, she relates why she's there, etc. and so forth. This story has the imprimatur of the Catholic Church, which means that it's right in line with Catholic teaching and that it is free from any doctrinal error. And even though it hasn't actually been pronounced as being authentic, you can bet it's a true story. Due to the shortness of time, we have edited out a couple parts so as to keep it a little more concise. The story is as follows. It reads, Clara and Annette, both single Catholics in their early 20s, worked adjacent to each other as employees of a commercial firm in Germany. Although they were never close friends, they shared a courteous mutual regard, which led to an exchange of ideas and eventually of confidences. Clara professed herself openly religious and felt it her duty to instruct and admonish Annette when the latter appeared excessively casual or superficial in religious matters. In due course, Annette married and left the firm. The year was 1937. Clara spent the autumn of that year on holiday at Lake Garda. About the middle of September, she received a letter from her mother. Annette is dead. She was a victim of an auto accident and was buried yesterday at Waldfriedhof. Clara was frightened, since she knew her friend was not very religious. Was she prepared to appear before God? Dying suddenly, what had happened to her? The next day, she attended Mass, received Holy Communion, and prayed fervently for her friend. The following night, at 10 minutes after midnight, the vision took place. Her friend spoke, "Clara, do not pray for me. I am in hell. If I tell you this and speak at length about it, do not think it is because of our friendship. We here do not love anyone. I do this as under constraint. In truth, I should like to see you too come to this state where I must remain forever." Perhaps that angers you, but here we all think that way. Our wills are hardened in evil, in what you call evil. Even when we do something good, as I do now, it's not because of a good intention. Do you still remember our first meeting 4 years ago? You were then 23 and had been there already half a year, because I was a beginner and you gave me some helpful advice. Then I praised your love of neighbor. Ridiculous. Your help was mere cockery to me. Here we do not acknowledge any good in anybody. Do you remember what I told you about my youth? Now I am painfully compelled to fill in some of the gaps. According to the plan of my parents, I should not have existed. A quote-unquote misfortune brought about my conception. My two sisters were 14 and 15 when I was born. Would that I had never existed. Would that I could now annihilate myself, escape these torments. No pleasure would equal that with which I could abandon my existence as a garment of ashes which has lost in nothingness. But I must continue to exist as I chose to make myself, a ruined person. When father and mother, still young, left the country for the city, they had lost touch with the church and were keeping company with irreligious people. They had met at a dance, and after a year and a half of companionship, they had to get married. As a result of the nuptial ceremony, so much holy water remained on them that my mother attended Sunday Mass a couple of times a year, but she never taught me to pray. Instead, she was completely taken up with the daily cares of life, although our situation was not bad. I refer to prayer, Mass, religious instruction, holy water, church, with a very strong repugnance. I hate all that, as I hate those who go to church, and in general, every human being and everything. From a great many things do we receive our torture. Every knowledge received at the hour of death, every remembrance of things lived or known, is for us a piercing flame. In each remembrance, good and bad, we see the way in which grace was present, the grace we despised or ignored. What a torture this is. We do not eat. We do not sleep. We do not walk. Chained with howling and gnashing of teeth, we look appalled at our ruined life, hating and suffering. Do you hear what I say? We here drink hatred like water. Above all, we hate God. With great reluctance do I force myself to make you understand. The blessed in heaven must love God because they see him without veil in all of his dazzling beauty. That makes their bliss indescribable. We know this, and the knowledge makes us furious. Men on earth who know God from nature and from revelation can love him, but they are not compelled to do so. The believer, I say this with gnashing of teeth, who contemplates Christ on the cross with arms outstretched, will end by loving him. But he, whom God approaches only in the final storm, as punisher, as just avenger, because he was rejected by him, such a person cannot but hate him with all the strength of his wicked will. We died with willful resolve to be separated from God. Do you now understand why hell lasts forever? It is because our wills were fixed for eternity at the moment of death. We had made our final choice. Our obstinacy will never leave us. Under compulsion, I must add that God is merciful even towards us. I affirm many things against my will and must choke the torrent of abuses I should like to vomit out. God was merciful to us by not allowing our wicked wills to exhaust themselves on earth as we would have liked to. This would have increased our faults and our pains. He caused us to die before our time, as in my case. You were scared when once, during a walk, I told you that my father, a few days before my first communion, had told me, "My little Annette, the main thing is your beautiful white dress. All the rest is just make-believe." We were not allowed to receive communion until the age of 12. By then I was already absorbed in worldly amusements and found it easy to set aside without scruple the things of religion. Thus, I attached no great importance to my first communion. We are furious that many children go to communion at the age of 7. We do all that we can to make people believe that children have insufficient knowledge at that age. They must first commit some mortal sins. Then the white particle will not do so much damage to our cause as when faith, hope, and charity are still alive in their hearts. Once you warned me, Anne, if you do not pray, you will go to perdition. I used to pray very little indeed, and even this unwillingly. You were only then too right. All those who burn in hell did not pray or did not pray enough. Prayer is the first step towards God, and it is the decisive step, especially prayer to her who was the mother of Christ, whose name we never pronounce. Devotion to her rescues from the devil numberless souls whom sin would infallibly give to him. I continue my story, consumed with rage, and only because I have to. To pray is the easiest thing that man on earth can do, and God has tied up the salvation in each one exactly to this very easy thing. To him who prays with perseverance, little by little God gives so much light, so much strength, that even the most debased sinner will at the end come back to salvation. During the last years of my life, I did not pray anymore, so I lacked those graces without which nobody can be saved. Here we no longer receive graces. Moreover, should we receive them, we would cynically refuse them. For years, I was living far away from God, for in the last call of grace, I decided against God. I never believed in the influence of the devil, and now I affirm that he has strong influence on the persons who are in the condition in which I was then. Only many prayers, others, and my own, united with sacrifices and penances, could have snatched me from his grip, and even this only little by little. I hate the devil too, and yet I am pleased about him because he tries to ruin all of you. He and his satellites, the spirits fallen with him at the beginning of time, there are millions of them. They roam around the earth, thick as a swarm of flies, and you do not even notice it. It is not reserved to us damned to tempt you, but to the fallen spirits. In truth, every time they drag down here to hell a human soul, their own torture is increased. But what does one not do for hatred? Deep down, I was rebelling against God. You did not understand it. You thought me still a Catholic. I wanted, in fact, to be called one. I even used to pay my ecclesiastical dues. Before my wedding, I went to confession and communion once more. It was like a precept. My husband and I thought alike on this point. Why not comply with this formality? So we complied with this, as with the other formalities. Our married life, in general, was spent in great harmony. We were of the same idea in everything. In this, too, that we did not want the burden of children. In truth, my husband would have liked to have one. In the end, I succeeded in dissuading him even from this desire. Dresses, luxurious furniture, places of entertainment, picnics and trips by car, and similar things were more important for me. It was a year of pleasure on earth, the one that passed from my marriage to my sudden death. Internally, of course, I was never happy, although externally at ease. There was always something indeterminate inside that gnawed at me. I used to give free vent to my ill humor about some medieval representations of hell in cemeteries or elsewhere, in which the devil is roasting souls and red burning coals, while his companions with long tails drag new victims to him. Clara, one can be mistaken in depicting hell, but never can one exaggerate. I tell you, the fire of which the Bible speaks does not mean the torment of the conscious. Fire is fire. What he said, "Away from me, you accursed ones, into eternal fire," is to be understood literally. Literally, I say. Our greatest torture consists in the certain knowledge that we shall never see God. How can this torture us so much, since on earth we are so indifferent? As long as the knife lies on the table, it leaves you cold. You see how keen it is, but you do not feel it. Plunge the knife into your flesh, and you will start screaming for pain. Now we feel the loss of God before we only thought of it. Not all the souls suffer to the same degree. With how greater wickedness and how systematically one has sinned, the more weighs on him the loss of God, and the more the creature he abused is choking him. The lost Catholics suffer more than those of other religions because they, mostly, received and despised more graces and more light. He who knew more suffers more cruelly than he who knew less. He who sinned out of malice suffers more keenly than he who sinned out of weakness. But nobody suffers more than he deserves. My death happened this way. A week ago, I'm speaking according to your reckoning, because according to pain, I could very well say that it's been already 10 years that I am burning in hell. My husband and I, on a Sunday, went on a picnic, the last one for me. The day was glorious. I felt very well. A sinister sense of pleasure that was with me all day long invaded me. When lo, suddenly during the return, my husband was dazzled by a car that was coming full speed. He lost control. The word Jesus escaped my lips with a shivering, not as a prayer, but as a shout. A lacerating pain took hold of me. Then I lost consciousness. Strange. That morning, this thought had come to me in an inexplicable way. You can go to Mass once more. It seemed like the last call of love. Clear and resolute, my no cut off that train of thought. You will know already what happened after my death. I myself awoke from the darkness suddenly In the instant of my passing, I saw myself flooded by dazzling light. It was in the same place where my dead body was lying. It was like a theater, when suddenly the lights in the hall are put out, and the curtains are rent aside, and an unexpected scene, horribly illuminated, appears. The scene of my life. My soul showed herself to me as in a mirror, all the graces despised from my youth until my last no to God. I felt myself like an assassin to whom his dead victim is shown during his trial at court. Should I repent? Never. Should I feel ashamed? Never. However, I could not even stand before the eyes of God, rejected by me. There was only one thing for me to do, flight. As Cain fled from the dead body of Abel, so my soul rushed from that sight of horror. This was the particular judgment. The invisible judge said, "Away from me." Then my soul, as a yellow brimstone shadow, fell headlong into the place of eternal torture. End of story. You are listening to St. Michael's Broadcast, and we've been reading from a revelation from the dead which occurred in Germany in 1937. This was a departed soul who had spoken to her friend from hell. And boy, does that carry a message for all of us, that we have to acknowledge the reality of the supernatural and conduct our lives upon earth accordingly. As Our Lady has said so often in her message, that each and every one of us on earth is going to die sooner or later. And when we die, we will live on for all eternity. But where we spend that eternity is all determined by how we spend our time on earth. This is why Our Lady tells us in the message that we have to keep the commandments, that we have to recite the daily rosary, and if we are baptized Catholics, we have to return to the church, but we must return in the traditional manner. According to Our Lady, the present trend of spiritual thought in the church today is not Catholic, because it is not part of the church's ongoing tradition or magisterium. This is part of the new reform since Vatican II, which our progressive liberal thinkers have put together for us. And this is precisely why Christ is sending his warning to his shepherds today, because these new ideas and liturgical procedures are seducing his flock with error. We are going to listen now to a segment of the message from heaven as it was delivered by Our Lady to Veronica on June 18, 1993. Just to orient you again, these visitations from Jesus and Mary would take place during rosary vigils at the Vatican Pavilion site in Flushing Meadows Park, New York. This is the site of Our Lady's apparitions in these last days. Veronica, during the vigils, would see the Blessed Virgin and her son, who in turn would instruct her to repeat out loud the message they would give her. All is recorded on tape. Now what you're going to hear is Veronica's voice, but it is the Blessed Virgin speaking through her.
My children, it is almost too late to reach the multitudes. My heart is torn by the knowledge that many will die in the flame of the ball of redemption. Many will not be prepared. I have come to you through many earth years, and how many have listened to my counsel? How many have tried to mend their ways that offend their God? My child and my children, especially you, Veronica, my child, make it known that your country will soon receive a just punishment for the slaughter of the young, for the abomination to their God-given bodies, will receive a just punishment. I repeat this three times in warning to you all who are the ones, the cultists of the world now, who have been instrumental in the destruction of the young. Cardinals, bishops, priests of the Order of God, if you are guilty, turn from your ways. I make no accusations by name, though the list is growing long to the Eternal Father. You who were given the God-given grace to be leaders of the flock have now scattered our sheep. Bishops, what has become of your vocation? You are becoming despoilers of the human race. You cannot hide your sin from the Eternal Father. Turn back while there is time. Now, Our Lady is touching her lips, and she is going like this, which means to listen, but don't repeat.
You are listening to St. Michael's broadcast, and we've been listening to the message from the Blessed Virgin as it was delivered to the seer Veronica on June 18, 1993. We'd like to invite you to write in for the free information. You can send your letters to St. Michael's World Apostolate, P.O. Box 514, Bayside, New York, 11361, or you can call toll-free 1-800-345-MARY. We also invite you to visit us at www.smwa.org. That mailing address again for all the free information, St. Michael's World Apostolate, P.O. Box 514, Bayside, New York, 11361. That's St. Michael's World Apostolate, P.O. Box 514, Bayside, New York, 11361. And if you'd like a copy of today's tape, just send along $3, and it's yours. And that just about wraps it up for today. Please join with us next week as we continue with this urgent message of Our Lady of the Roses at Bayside. Until then, may Our Lady bless you, and may she shower you with graces and abundance.